I am pretty excited to show this to you. Yeah, this is me excited. This is Surface Duo.
Hello, Internet, and welcome to the Engadget podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And we are back, baby! It's been 2.5 years since the last Engadget podcast, and a lot's changed since then. We have folding phones. 5G is actually starting to roll out. We're hoping to stick around for a while now. I'm up for it. Sherlyn is up for it.
I will say good luck, because my levels are, like, odd. The range is so small, my waveforms.
If you want to get in touch with us, everything is the same. You can email us at podcastengadget.com. If you want to send feedback or topics you'd like us to cover, subscribe to us on iTunes or your platform of choice. And as always, review us on iTunes, because that is still the most important podcast platform for some reason. This week, we're getting to a big topic.
Yeah, we went to the Microsoft Surface event last week, didn't we?
We did. And I, you know, the whole time, I think a question was percolating in my mind. Is Microsoft making better PCs than Apple now?
I mean, that's a good question. I'd like to first point out that that sounds like a misnomer, because PCs are Windows machines. Come on.
Oh, I mean, you know, a personal computer. The original Mac was a personal computer. I think Apple's done a great job of, like, changing the language so that, oh, we're not just a PC. We're Apple. We're Macs. What is up with Microsoft, Sherlyn? What's going on this week?
So at that event that we were at, when we spent like basically 4 or 5 hours at,
Microsoft, I lived there basically. Mm-hmm.
Same. Microsoft unveiled a whole slew of new devices. We saw, I mean, I'll run you down really quickly, but I'll talk about the most interesting one after. The Surface Neo and Surface Duo, those were like dual screen laptops and phones that we saw. We also saw a bunch of new Surface Pros, Surface Laptop 3, Surface Earbuds. So it was kind of like Microsoft becoming the Amazon of Windows.
There's a Surface PC for everybody, basically. I feel like that's the main takeaway now.
Pretty much. But I will say I was super into the Surface Pro X, which I spent a bunch of time with. It's the it's a really thin and light Surface Pro. I mean, if you think you've seen a Surface Pro, you know, and you think you know the way this one feels, think again.
They've always been kind of chunky and a little too thick, although I really like the design of the Surface Pro. But there is a Surface Pro 7 this year. It hasn't changed much since last year. So what's up with the Pro X?
The Pro X is really thin and light, like I said. Mm-hmm. But then also it uses a customized chip that's, I think, a result of a collaboration between Microsoft and Snapdragon.
Uh-huh.
It didn't really come
out
and say it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's called the SQ1. And it's an ARM-based processor. And we all know Microsoft's history with Windows on ARM.
It hasn't been too great. Sherlyn, I mean, you've been covering the whole Snapdragon and ARM thing for a while, the whole trend of, like, always on PCs, which is something we've heard at Computex when we go to that event. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like that branding, that idea, has translated into actual machines. It's just been kind of concept so far. To me, this seems like the best culmination of everything they've been aiming for with those PCs.
I would say there have been machines. They've just not been great. This the Pro X is Windows taking ownership of the whole Windows on ARM or Windows on Snapdragon charge. And I'm super into the idea of always connected PCs. Don't get me wrong. Like, LTE everywhere you go, being able to buy stuff over eSIM, that's ridiculously cool and convenient.
Gotcha. And I think it's interesting that this is a Pro machine, because it is a Snapdragon processor. I'd never call a mobile processor Pro. I was expecting, we heard inklings about this machine. I was expecting it to be like the Surface 4 or something, right? Because there hasn't been a straight up smaller Surface for a while. I guess not since the Go.
The Go, yeah.
Yeah, but this is, no, they're straight up calling this Pro. They're making this, something that basically competes with the Pro 7 and other top tier laptops.
It's so weird, right? Like, the naming makes it sound like this might be even more powerful than the Pro 7, because it's the Pro X.
Pro X. I think the X just stands for that cool new design, because it is, it's so thin. It's crazy light. Yeah.
Or is it the Pro 10? You know,
Pro
10. I mean?
No, I don't know. They're not going to pull an Apple here.
I hope not.
Yeah. Was there any? Yeah. What else struck you about this machine? It looks really cool. I like where the stylus goes. It seems like a smart idea.
I would say the stylus is part of the new signature keyboard cover, and that might be something you can get with a regular Surface Pro anyway. It uses the same ports. What did strike me, again, my Hands-on time was so limited, but I did play around with it. I launched a couple apps. They were fast. It didn't feel like there was an ARM emulator in between. So I'm intrigued. And I would say we'd have to get it in to test all the stuff we normally test before I can be like, this SQ1 chip really makes all the difference in performance. But for now, the design is what stands out. It's really thin and light. You guys, it's like half the size of a typical Surface tablet in terms of thickness.
Gotcha. And what is interesting, too, is that the price, I think, is... It's a pro price. You're paying the full price of a laptop, right? Where does it start again?
$999.
That is surprising.
That's the price of a flagship phone, though. Think about it.
Yeah, well, that's true. A super flagship phone, but also the price of, like, you know, dare I say, a real laptop, or like any laptop right now. It's just to me, my mind is trying hard to like compute the value of this. But if Apple's selling, you know, the iPad Pro for $1,000+, the iPad Pro, which looks suspiciously like all of the Surfaces, to me, this feels like an iPad Pro competitor, if anything else.
I think so, but I think there's a lot of other tablets out there we could compare this against, like the Galaxy Tab S6 has a similar design, but it's a lot smaller, right? It's not a 13-inch. So, I don't know. It is really expensive, but it's not like Microsoft has shied away from making expensive things in the past. The good news is they've dropped the price for the Surface Pro 7. It's now a $749 starting price with an i3 processor rather than the Pro 6 was, which was $899 for like an i5.
Useless. Well, I've always liked the Pros. To me, I feel like those screens are a little too cramped, but I'm sure there's a market for the Pro 7. That's still around if you still want a more traditional PC, something more powerful. Yeah.
Wait, with USB-C?
With USB-C, both of them. Yeah.
Thank God.
Thank God. You can charge over USB-C. There is no Thunderbolt 3, which is, I think, kind of a disappointment because that means you can't plug in like an external GPU case or something and play games on your Surface. But oh well.
It's a very sad day in my life when USB-C is the best thing I can get hype about.
You know, I have a lot to say about that, Sherlyn, but I'm going to keep that to myself. To myself. I think the star of the show, the star of the entire Surface event, was Microsoft's dual screen devices, which we heard inklings about. I think the first one they showed off is the Neo, which is a dual screen, basically a PC running Windows 10X, which is a new variant of the OS for dual screen devices. So that also means we're going to be seeing devices like this from Dell, HP, Lenovo, Asus, I believe. Some of them have been previewed over the past few years. I think at Computex 2 years ago, we saw Project Precog, which is that was Asus's dual screen machine. And I think we all were like, I don't know if they can actually make this, but go for it, Asus. Lenovo said their next Yoga would have dual screens as well. So this seems like this is the stuff we can look forward to next year. The Surface Neo is coming holiday season 2020. So they're showing this to us really early to get us ready. And
Dev,
I have to say,
can you tell me a little bit about like 10X and like how how a dual screen OS is going to be a bit different from regular Windows?
Yeah, I had a bit of a chat with Microsoft about this, and 10X it's just Windows 10, but they've kind of rethought it for having two separate displays. So it seems like the start menu is a little smarter, right? You can invoke the start menu from either screen. It's not like a dual monitor setup where your start menu lives on like some random screen and then you hit start on one screen and it pops up and then an app pops up in another. Mm-hmm. It just seems to make sense. So you can like you can easily swap apps between both screens. You can put up your mail and a web browser on one screen separately. You can have a single app span both screens, which is useful if you want to use these devices like a tablet, or some devices or some apps are going to be optimized for that functionality too. So Microsoft showed off the Mail app, where if you span it, you'll get your, you know, directory of messages on one side of one screen and the full message on another. And it's beautiful. I think it's cool. It's a really good look. This is basically the Courier design that I've been dreaming of for a while, since we saw that thing nearly 10 years ago. And they're finally making it. I'm very excited. There is a slim pen that can magnetically attach to the back of it. There is a keyboard that's also sold separately, like all the other Surface keyboards, damn it. that sticks to the bottom. It can kind of flip up as a normal keyboard.
It's sold separately? I thought
it's sold separately.
Was attached.
No,
oh, man,
no, no. This
so
is Microsoft,
cool.
And they're going to make you pay for every little bit. The pen is separate. The keyboard is separate. But the keyboard is pretty cool. It can live behind the Surface Neo and flip up to be used as like a normal keyboard. And then it turns the little sliver at the top of the screen into something they're calling the Wonder Bar, which is sort of like the touch bar, basically the touch bar.
You mean the emoji bar?
The emoji bar. It could be for shortcuts. It could be for emojis, so many different things. But if you push the keyboard up, right below the top screen, the bottom part of the bottom screen ends up being like a trackpad. That's super smart. So you could use it either way.
A friend of mine asked me if you can close the device completely flat when the keyboard's sitting inside.
You can.
And there's no gaps.
I didn't see a gap. They didn't. So I got to be in like a little small room, like looking and touching these things for a little bit, literally 30 seconds with each device. And the other device, by the way, is the Surface Duo, which we're going to talk about. That's the slightly smaller Neo. But yeah, it closed just fine. It feels really good. The Neo feels it's covered in Gorilla Glass, which there's good and bad too. But I think they thought really hard about how the antenna design works for this. So if it were a metal back, it would be tougher, but this thing has a built-in LTE modem. It can do eventually. They could just upgrade it with 5G down the line without changing the case much because it's a radio transparent case. It feels good. It opens and closes nicely. The key to this thing is the hinge. And the fact that, you know, this is a folding device. It's not a folding screen, but I read about this at Engadget. I think this is a better design. I think this makes a lot more sense.
I think we differ a little there, but I think we can get into it in a little bit. I was curious because you mentioned we were talking about the OS really quickly. I do think that the biggest challenge for Microsoft here would be the apps, right? Like they would have to get every developer on board, and Windows doesn't have the best history on that front.
You're right. That's been a problem since Windows 8, right? Since they were trying to push people to making touchscreen apps.
Metro UI.
Yeah, they've acknowledged that. I think there are definitely some changes where app developers will have to make some of their own changes. But I saw a couple examples of things where the current Windows Metro app from the Windows Store just worked. It spanned across the screens just fine, or it flowed information between the left and right screen just fine. So there's going to be some, you know, learning that these developers will have to do, but sort of like the jump from the iPhone to the iPad. Maybe these devices will be more compelling than the Windows touchscreen apps or the Windows Store. So maybe they'll get more devs on board that way.
I hope so. Good luck to them. And that's why, right, Pano said also that's why they're teasing it a year ahead of time, because they want developers to get on board. Like, why tease it so early, right?
I think, yeah, this gives them basically, a full year of development time before the release. That's pretty exciting. And also, so there's the other thing. There was a one more thing, which I don't think we've ever seen from Panos. I was very surprised by this. So we were expecting the Neo. Then he went ahead and pulled a smaller dual-screen device from his pocket, and that's the Surface Duo, which is running Android and has two, I believe, under 6-inch screens. It's pocketable. It looks really nice and light, certainly much lighter than the Neo. And it looks like something I could easily live with as a phone. What did you think, Charlotte?
So if I'm not wrong, the spec is they're both 5.6-inch screens.
Yes.
A lot of people on Twitter, and I mean, I noticed this after they said it, but it looked like two iPad minis stuck together. That's what people were saying. I fully agree. I also love people on Twitter for pointing this stuff out.
Or like two, it's more like two iPhone 6s, because it's small. These are smaller screens, right?
It's 5.6 inches. The iPad mini is more like 8 or 7 inches.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Listen, I have a hard time thinking dual screen phones are going to survive, because we've tried, right? There's been so many attempts. There's, you know, I've written about this a lot, and I know folding screens present a whole different challenge.
So many challenges.
That is very similar. I think, though, that the software is the huge, like, make or break here, right? Like, if you can present a compelling use case for people to really want to use this thing, then they're going to buy it. Right now, what we've got is a lot of hype in both cases.
In both cases. But I think I talked to Ralph, I forget his last name, but he's Microsoft's head industrial guy. Basically, I wrote up this piece at Engadget about the durability of these two design ideas. So having two screens and like a strong hinge connecting them versus having a single screen that folds itself over, and that would be folding OLED like on the Galaxy Fold, the Huawei Mate X, the Royale, what was that? FlexPi?
The Matex doesn't fold on itself. The Royal FlexPi, yeah, that one.
Right. Well, the Matex still, it folds in a different way, but still, yeah, it still folds. And I think there's a fundamentally different, like, all sorts of different issues that come with doing a folding screen like that, right? Because then when you're folding the display itself, that is dangerous. These are devices that live in our pockets. Like, I think opening and shutting a screen itself is bad compared to having two separate screens that just kind of, they're near each other. They're very thin and close to each other, but they're not, it's not the physical display that you're moving. You're just moving the hinge. And I think that's going to go a long way towards durability.
So yeah, you got to see this in action and I didn't. The gap in between the two screens, how big is it?
It's, I mean, it's noticeable. It's clearly there's a bezel there and clearly there's a hinge there. I think on both the Neo and the Duo, I could certainly live with it. It's sort of like having, if you've ever run two monitors and you've had like maybe a little strip of bezel in between them, I think it's perfectly fine. Like, you could still use apps in a tablet formation. But what's interesting too is that you have this clear separation of screen space. So you can think of like one type of app on one side versus one on the other. Whereas, yeah, on a folding phone, you could do that, but there's less of a clear separation. And yeah,
I think that the biggest concern with folding phones is durability, right?
Yes.
And the hinge and the little things that pop up underneath the screen when you jab at it too hard, if you can feel the mechanics inside the phone, if you poke at the screen too hard, that's some of the issues that have been reported with the Galaxy Fold.
Yeah, so Samsung is telling you, keep your Galaxy Fold away from dust or, you know, your pants. Keep it away from liquids. Don't press it too hard with your fingers. And I think the issue that hits all of these folding phones is that they really only, they fold one way. If you fold it the other way, you start to like twist it, that's bad. That's an easy way to break your phone.
I mean, so okay, whatever it is, like, listen, good luck. Everything's gonna be like in there's a lot they all have to figure out. I will say though, Microsoft has had a chance to figure out phones for a while.
Sure.
And then they went away and then they were like, oh, we're not gonna touch phones. And then also with the naming of the Surface Duo, it's very clear they're staying away from the word phone here. In fact, I didn't think it was a phone until people were like, this is Android and this is a phone.
Yeah. Well, the video starts with the person picking up a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they put away their Neo and then they pick up the Duo and they answer a phone call. It's a small pocketable device. So, yeah, yeah. I see on Twitter and certainly in the conversation around this, a lot of people are saying Microsoft refuses to call it a phone. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but they're thinking of this as more of like a multifunction device, I guess.
Yeah. I guess it's because, again, Microsoft's history with Windows Phone is so bad.
It's bad.
It's so bad. They didn't have, what was it, like they had about 2.5% market share as of 2015 when they were still trying.
Yeah.
And
then it went downhill from there. Yeah. And
exactly.
Then it died. They weren't, when they stop it, like 2017 is when they killed the platform entirely. You know, that is. Yeah. That. So I think the clear difference, too, is that this is a very different Microsoft than what we've seen before. So it's not just Windows Phone, right? We saw the Kin, which was released for some reason, I believe just months before Windows Phone was even launching, and it didn't need to exist. It sold reportedly 503 units or shipped between 1,000 and 10,000 units. No matter how you look at it, an absolute failure. I will say I bought one of those. I bought one of those,
God,
on eBay for like $30. I love it. It feels so good. I have an inkling, or I have a love for like weird, just weird devices. And the Kins were developed by the folks from Danger who made the Sidekick. So it has that sort of like Sidekick legacy, but it was way too late for the Kin. Windows Phone, I think, suffered from the same issue, right? It came several years after the iPhone launched, after Android launched. They had a decent OS. I think they tried to do something different functionality-wise. Like, it looked cool. But third-party support is what really killed them, right?
Exactly, absolutely. And that's what's going to make them or help them this time, hopefully. But I am heartened or encouraged that they are going with Android for the Duo. I think it has a much better shot at success if they go with a more popular OS, which, by the way, Android is like the most popular smartphone OS right now.
Sure, the most popular.
Like 80% of the industry, of the market, by the way.
Probably, yeah, yeah.
I was surprised to see that stat, sorry.
Certainly. I mean, in 2015, it was 82%. I will say there were those stories about, like, high school kids in America and how they all shun the people with Android phones. So I wonder, Microsoft does not have a solution for that. I just think it's hilarious. That's where we are as a society. But yeah, Windows Phone kind of failed with third-party apps. I think the hardware is always interesting. They bought Nokia, which was kind of a mess, but they tried. I think they tried really hard. They just failed at a platform level. And I think now, certainly with this, they're not launching a whole new form platform, right? They're just launching this one thing, running Android, that functions a little differently. And I think this is a more focused way of approaching phones and probably smarter for them, right?
We'll see. We'll see. There's people who've been trying to make dual screen or folding Android phones. We just have to see if Microsoft has what it takes. They have proven they're good at hardware with other devices, right?
Yeah.
The Pro is really great. And then the laptop, too, I just freaking love. You know what I mean?
I think the one thing that really gives me a lot more faith in the Neo and the Duo compared to a lot of other devices is it's really that hinge. Microsoft has been perfecting hinges since the first Surface. It was kind of rough at the beginning, right? Remember, the first Surface really only had, two directions or, one or two notches for how you could actually position the kickstand. And then eventually they moved to, this really cool omnidirectional hinge. And they've just been doing this work that I think a lot of the PC industry has tried to copy. Certainly Lenovo has gone really hard on, trying to mimic those hinges.
Samsung, too.
Yeah. It's a weird thing to bring up, but I think it's really important here because the hinge is the key. The hinge is what connects these devices or these two screens. And they've also developed this new very tiny coaxial cable technology that hooks up the two screens. So that's a point of failure that could be an issue. But
does
I think
that live in the hinge? I'm sorry.
It goes through the hinge and it basically connects the screens. But to me, that is far less worrisome than an entire folding screen and all the issues we've seen around that. Yeah.
I will say it's not like hinges aren't important in folding screens. You know what I mean? They are important there too. And companies like Samsung, Huawei, and TCL are going ham talking about their hinges too.
Yeah. Their hinges are good, but they have to move the screen. I think that's the key for me.
Yeah.
Microsoft does not have to move the key of the screen. Yeah.
You mentioned that the Fold, which you have touched, and the Duo just felt different when you're opening them, right? Like you said, that it feels more like the Surface one has a more smooth kind of movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very confident. It's a weird way to describe it. It's sort of like the difference between opening and shutting a really expensive car, a BMW versus a Honda Civic. And there is a smoothness, there's a really strength to the motion that I think is really, it feels very strong to me.
It sounds like there's the same amount of resistance as you open, say, the Duo all the way open and then lay it flat compared to the Fold, which sort of has this spring mechanism towards the end where it kind of flops about a little bit and doesn't feel as sturdy, right?
It's a little floppy. It's just holding the Fold, I feel like I'm holding this fragile little object. Whereas with the Duo and the Neo, it's like, oh, you're a jewelry case. You are protecting the precious screen. You're protecting the precious internals when it's closed. And that's also something you don't really get with the folding screens. And I just want to point out, the folding screens are basically plastic. There is nothing protecting those because glass doesn't fold, everybody. Newsflash, glass doesn't fold. And the other big benefit here is that Microsoft can have Gorilla Glass screens and have them completely sealed off from the world when it's in your pocket. I think that's a big deal.
I just want to do my job for all the people who know I'm a phone reviewer and point out that the LG has a similar setup with the V, I believe it's, what is it, the G8X ThinQ now that I saw at IFA, and it is a snap-on case that adds a dual screen to it, so similar setup.
Yeah, people in the comments were telling me this. It's like, oh, LG's phone with a snap-on case where you plug in something else. Oh, yeah, that's clearly as seamless.
It is not the same thing. You actually even have to slide the phone into the case and connect it via USB-C. It is a very strange workaround to a problem, whereas this Duo is an actual dual screen device that they're both connected to each other all the time.
Yep.
I wonder what that means for battery life. I'm not going to speculate too much.
We'll see. I will also say they're both very, very thin. The screens are very thin. So even though you're folding these things and sandwiching these screens together, I think their thinness, that could hurt battery life. But in terms of functionality, they feel really good. Unfortunately, we won't be seeing those for another year. So stay tuned for more on that. Let's talk about Surface Laptop 3, which I think is kind of... Here's the thing about the Surface Laptop. It is just an ultra-portable PC. I really like the first one. Trillin, you reviewed the last one, right?
I loved my laptop, too. I loved it.
Yeah. And it feels good. I think it had a couple issues in that very limited port availability with the earlier ones. You just had one USB-A port, which I know really hurt you when we were trying to live blog this Microsoft event.
I was ready to kill someone, yes.
because you brought two computers just to deal with that. So the Surface Laptop 3 adds a USB-C port instead of the mini display port. So that opens up all sorts of new functionality there. It's not a Thunderbolt 3 connection, unfortunately, just like the Surface Pro 7. And so, yeah, that's a downside. The other interesting thing is that there's a 15-inch version now of the Laptop 3. And that is kind of interesting because it's like, it doesn't feel significantly heavier than the 13-inch model. It comes in at 3.5 pounds, which is a half pound lighter than the MacBook Pro 13-inch. And I think slightly more than a half pound heavier than the 13-inch Surface Laptop. It just feels good. It feels like impossibly light for its weight. The keyboard is still fantastic. Microsoft knows how to make keys with actual travel, unlike Apple's glass thing that I hate so much. It feels really good. And the other thing, too, is that you can plug in an AMD processor into the 15-inch version. And an AMD chip with Ryzen graphics, two different types of Ryzen graphics. So you could play some games, but I think more interestingly, you could also use it for like video encoding or any like GPU accelerated functions, right?
The other thing that really stood out for me is that wasn't this supposed to be modular? And that, I think that's what you're talking about, right? That you can like lift up the keyboard case and swap out the plugs or the parts if you're...
A little, it's modular. So they did show this off. It's modular in terms of like repairs. So Microsoft was clearly like, you shouldn't do this at home. But if you bring your laptop to be repaired somewhere, it won't like, they won't have to replace the entire computer just to change the keyboard or just to change a piece of hardware. I think that's the main takeaway. So it makes the Laptop 3 much more useful for IT people. I used to be an IT person. I always appreciated being able to kick open a device and just swap out what I needed rather than buy something new or replace it entirely. So that's who that part is for. Certainly, it'll make the Surface Laptop more intriguing for corporate customers. I think that's a big thing there.
I mean, I love the laptop too, and I was surprised to see that the 15-inch really wasn't all that much different from the 13-inch. I honestly couldn't tell them apart.
Yeah.
And compared to the rest of 15-inch laptops on the market right now, I am impressed because the Dell XPS 15, which I recently reviewed, it's like surprisingly like a behemoth compared to the laptop 15. I mean,
it looks like it did. The Dell also looks like it did like 3 or 4 years ago too. They haven't changed the design much. It's
super chunky.
It's kind of disappointing. I know you like the LG Gram 15 as well.
The 15 and also actually the LG Gram 17 was what really impressed me the more. It was a 17-inch machine that felt like a 15-inch, which, you know, maybe Microsoft will get there someday.
The downside here is that you still have fairly limited ports, right? The XPS 15, the good thing about that and other workhorse machines like that is you get every single freaking port you need. You get HDMI, you get USB-A, you get USB-C, you get everything. And you don't really have that with the Surface Laptop. You'd have to plug in a hub or one of those cool USB-C things you have, Sherlyn.
I have a lot of cool USB-C things, it's true. I agree. I mean, my Dell XPS 15 is everything I could want out of it. Yes, HDMI and a micro SD card reader or an SD card reader, which is important for my job. But I'm not opposed to lugging around a tiny little USB hub to get all of that.
It's the way of the world now, yeah.
My main concern would just be battery life. Obviously, the XPS 15 isn't meant to be taken with you on the go since it's so heavy, so battery life isn't a huge concern, but with something like the Laptop 3, 15-inch, you know.
You get more, yeah. It also, it bridges a gap. First of all, the Surface Laptop battery life was always good, so certainly they can fit in more. It bridges Microsoft's product line between the laptop and the Surface Book 2, which is much bigger, much heavier, much more expensive. And to me, that always felt like overkill for somebody who just wanted something a little more powerful. So I think that's who the Surface Laptop 3 15-inch is for, the person who may be doing some video editing, some audio editing, and doesn't need to go all the way to the Surface Book or something.
I mean, let's get it in and test it out, and then we can see what it does. Right?
Coming soon, right? Yeah, we'll be reviewing all these things soon. I'm looking forward to it. It's a busy season over here at Engadget.
So We saved this for the last of the day, just because I don't think we were like in any hurry to get to this product that they announced at the show. This was like 4 p.m. They were chasing us out of the event.
It was not even 4 p.m. They chased us out super early. I have beef. I beef against Microsoft and how they managed this event, because there's a lot of stuff going on. But it was the last thing we saw. Yes.
Yeah. After pumping out like two hands-ons each, we both ran into this little audio booth inside the Microsoft event, and we tested out the new Surface earbuds. And I have to say, I love them. I know I've said this about a lot of things today, but I love these earbuds.
It sounds like you like Microsoft devices, Sherlyn. Interesting.
Oh, man. I might be a PC nerd, which is funny to that one person who accused me of being an Apple fan on Twitter. No, I'm not.
They don't know you at all. Okay.
They do not know me. But the earbuds here are very interesting. They're you said this was like a weird new take on earbuds.
And in terms of like the way the tips fit into your ears.
Right, exactly. So Microsoft has focused a lot on the ergonomics and the comfort and the fit of the earbuds. And I won't say that they've neglected audio quality in the effort to pursue that, because we just haven't compared them to Bose or Sony's yet.
It was also a very loud room, so I can't judge audio quality there.
It sounded okay, but whatever it is, here is it. I am a person who has very sensitive ears. I have had issues with cerumen impaction. I'm using the scientific term so that you don't get squeamish about what it actually is. But if you have clogged ear holes like I do, you don't like in-ear buds, okay? And they're going to like be itchy, they're going to be whatever. You don't want to push things inside your ear canal further. But the Surface earbuds are different. They feel so comfortable. The tip that extends inside your ear canal is very small, so I didn't feel it like it was poking inside at all. So what you do with these, the buds themselves are, if you've seen the pictures, a lot bigger than your typical earbuds that are truly wireless.
They look like, what is it, those gauge earrings? Yeah, gauges.
They look like gauge earrings.
Huge, huge headphones.
Gigantic for truly wireless earbud standards. Mm-hmm. But it gives you a lot more control over how to hold them and how you can touch the panel or swipe up and down it. What it is you put each earbud into your ear with the tip pointing down, and then when it's inside your ear, you kind of like twist it upwards counterclockwise, and it will just sit in there. It's as if you've like locked something in your ear, like you've turned a key and it's like locked in place.
That's terrifying, by the way. This is our future, just locking devices onto our bodies.
Sure.
But it feels good. It feels secure. I felt it. I thought it was all right. Yeah.
I really liked it. I mean, I could go on forever about how important fit is. That's the main reason I've been looking for AirPods or even Huawei's FreeBuds 3, which have no, you know, bits that poke into your ear canal either. And I'm surprised and honestly kind of shook that Microsoft was the one that figured this out, that like some form of in-ears that fit comfortably.
It's a really cool design. And their designer said that they worked really hard in terms of like making something that you could basically wear all day and forget they're in your ears. And I have very weird ears, so I think I have your opposite problem, where my ears are huge and I think one is bigger than the other, so like I have to like figure out like the exact kind of like tip size and everything. It felt pretty good. It didn't feel as secure as I'd like, and I think the tester was like, you may be one of the 3% of people on the planet with like a weird, like, I don't know, like the weird first part of my ear, maybe too large to sit comfortably. But anyway, it sounded good. It fit all right. It's certainly better than the AirPods, which literally I cannot walk and use AirPods. I can barely sit still and use AirPods. They just do not stay in my ears. So
what earbuds can you use?
I actually like the in-ear buds because they're more secure. So I really like the new Sony's, the WF-1000XM3s. Billy Steele at Engadget reviewed those. I did the preview. They feel amazing. They sound amazing. Not the best for exercise. And when it comes to exercise, I really like Jaybird's. They're Free Run XTs, I believe, and also Jabra makes some really good ones. So ton of companies make great wireless earbuds right now. Microsoft is just doing something very different.
I mean, Amazon also just announced that they're making Echo earbuds, and you know what it is, I think, between Amazon, Microsoft, big names like Huawei jumping into the fray here means that like the earbud makers like Jaybird or Jabra might have difficulty kind of like standing out. They really have to go further into their niche, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think competition is good. These are premium wireless earbuds, whereas Jaybird and a lot of the others are doing like mid-range stuff. The Jabras in particular are pretty inexpensive. And then you have companies like Anker, which are just like doing straight up like AirPod copies, but they have real silicone tips too, so that is nice. Like they actually stay in my ears, and those things go for like $70-$80. So there's a broad range right now.
I think there's going to just be a lot of options for everybody. Whether your, you know, concern is budget or whether your concern is audio quality, you can go for the Sony ones if you want better sound. And as for the Microsoft ones, I just want to point out they're actually pretty unique too. You can use them to like live caption your PowerPoint slideshows, which I tried out. I mean, like, it seems kind of like a novelty right now. Like, you might not actually use it, but if you're presenting to people who are hard of hearing, it might actually be very useful. And then eventually they're going to add live translation as well, which is the dream, I think.
It looks cool. It sounds like they've spent a lot of time thinking about the microphones on these. So each has two microphones. They do a good job of like capturing what you're saying. The other thing too is that these aren't sealed designs, which is kind of nice too. Like, they're still open, which is good because you'll still hear the complete outside world while you're hearing your music. It's not great if you're going to be on the subway or something. Like, this is an issue I have with a lot of headphones. So it depends on how you're going to be using them. I think for people who want to have something they wear in the office all day for phone calls, for transcription work, for all this sort of stuff, and for music, it seems like a thing you can just wear and not worry about. So that's super cool.
Right. There's no noise canceling either. And then since we love Twitter so much, can I also say there was a funny tweet about these earbuds? I'm sorry, but will I am?
Oh, no.
It's kind of upset at Microsoft. I am underselling how upset he is. There is a whole movement, I think, about hashtag copycat that he's tweeted out. So apparently, according to a tweet that he posted, he went and talked to Microsoft about these designs for earbuds that he had. And I mean, the picture that he shared looks a lot similar.
Like, they're round. They're both round. Yeah.
They're both round. They both look like gauges. The mm-hmm. Will.i.am version looks like it sits a little lower in your ear. I don't know if there's any truth or credibility to this. I don't think Will.i.am would willingly post pictures if he didn't think that he was right. So I'm curious to see how this all unfolds. But yeah, it just was funny.
It's a little rough. And Will.i.am's version has, like, they're wireless, but they have, like, the little cable connecting them, which honestly I prefer. I prefer
you
on
like
all
necklace?
These phones. I like the necklace because when I'm done using these headphones, I could just let them like dangle there instead of like with these wireless ones, you got to find the case, you got to put it somewhere, and then I lose them in my shirt pockets. I lose them in different things. Like, it's not great. Not a great user experience. Anyway, we're looking forward to testing these out. These look pretty cool.
And I will say it's like, yeah, it's nice to see Microsoft differentiating again.
Okay, Sherlyn. Back to our initial question. We've just dove into all of Microsoft's new Surface stuff. Are they making better PCs than Apple now?
I mean, listen. putting aside macOS versus Windows, okay? Just on the hardware, yes.
Sure.
Yes. I mean, Apple has done certain things in the past, like eradicate all ports but one USB-C, that have made me feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it's not like the rest of the industry hasn't followed along. But Microsoft, this past week, or you know, this past year even, has just made me sit up and be like, yo, you guys can do some great stuff. Mm-hmm. And as a PC reviewer or as a laptop reviewer, it's just been really exciting to be a fan of like PCs, Windows laptops.
Gotcha. Well, I will say I presented this question to the podcast in general because it's something that's been percolating in my mind for a bit. And I think certainly for the past couple years, Microsoft has been making better PCs than Apple for all the reasons you mentioned, Sherlyn. It still shocks me that the MacBook Pro, the Pro machine, has four USB-C connections, which don't mm-hmm. really connect to any many devices that are out. Certainly when that thing launched, and even today, it's still kind of a mess. You still need a hub. Those sorts of things. The keyboards, I will never forgive Apple for these weird keyboards that feel so flat, and it's like you're typing on glass. Meanwhile, Microsoft can give us decent key travel in a freaking tablet case. You know, like, that is astounding to me. So I think between functionality, between innovation, and just good value for a consumer, I think Microsoft is just doing so many cool and interesting things. So I would say wholeheartedly yes. And it's not like I hate Apple. I want them to do better. I think they've been stuck in like this weird Johnny Ive, I don't know, like really closed vision zone where, like, I'm sure Johnny Ive was like, man, we can have symmetrical USB-C ports on the MacBook Pro. Let's do it. Screw functionality. Let's just make it symmetrical because that's what all it is.
I don't know if you're. I don't know if you should go there because your mentions are gonna be dumpster
I'm used to
fire.
It. I'm used to it, Trillin. Like I, you know, I do movie podcasts. I have opinions. It's totally fine. Anyway, my takeaway. Yes, Microsoft is making better PCs than Apple.
I as a person who mains PCs and occasionally uses MacBooks. All right, I'm gonna just say that I see the appeal of MacBooks sometimes because they used to be the leaders in hardware design. You know,
yes.
When the first MacBook Air came out. Good Lord, that was gorgeous, right? And then now it's like, come on, update something. So we'll see. I mean, maybe Apple's about to step it up, but first, fix your darn keyboards. Like, seriously? People's
yeah.
missing keys are a huge problem. You cannot let this happen.
They revised it, and they're still having trouble.
They're
it's
still having problems.
Hilarious.
Meanwhile, all of us on Windows are, like, typing away our full, legible, complete sentences.
It feels so
yes.
good. It feels so good.
Eat that, Apple.
How do you like them apples? Let's move on to Engadget Picks, and this is a collection of things we love. You know, the world is kind of a tough place these days sometimes. So let's talk about a few things that just bring us joy, and I want to bring up Untitled Goose Game, which
you
is...
You and the rest of the world, Devendra.
It's so good. It's so good. The goose is love. Goose is everything. This game is a perfect way to relax in a super stressful world. It's basically Hitman. As a goose, it brings in all those stealth mechanics in a fun, like, low-risk way, too. Like, you can't die. You can't really lose. You'll just get shooed away by people. It's cool. It's cool. The goose is an agent of chaos. Goose has no philosophy. It's just pain. It's just, like, you know, stir crap up, and I kind of love it. The game just gives you a checklist of things to do to mess up people's lives, and that's it. That's the game. I kind of love it. There's no overarching narrative there.
I've seen the trailers. I've watched my friends play. I have just not wanted to play because I am a goose in real life, you know? And our producer,
this
Ben,
is
like saying peace was never an option with the goose game. And that's their whole mantra, that goose. Meanwhile, I'm looking for some inner peace, you know? So
yeah.
I don't...
Shirlin is
to
a
be
goose
like...
that wants peace. Yeah.
If a goose in real life is just looking to... play an RPG about going to the spa, you know what I mean?
Listen, you can do all that, and I know you were super excited about, what, getting a Switch eventually, too, right?
Oh,
so
you could
do all that.
I want to buy the Switch Lite so I can play an RPG about going, getting a massage. I think that's my goal. But my pick is a game that my friend recommended me. It's called Baba Is You, and I think, Dev, you've heard of this game. It's just
I
a
have.
Puzzle game. It's a logic game. It, you know, test the limits of what you think is real. What are definitions of life? What is you? You know what I mean? And I've been playing a phone version of it, which is not as challenging as the Switch version. It's you know, if you're an intellectual, like I would like to think I am, then you should
debatable.
Listen, y'all.
Speaking of phone games, by the way, I just want to throw a shout out to Apple Arcade, which is it's kicking butt. I wrote the preview.
I thought you didn't like Apple. I thought you didn't like Apple.
I like Apple Arcade. It's weird. A little back and forth here. I am an iPhone user. Like, here's the thing. So I don't. I think Android is kind of a mess as an OS.
Whoa.
This is a topic for a future episode.
Okay.
Apple Arcade is their subscription service. $5 a month. You get access to. It's going to be up to 100 games this fall. It is fantastic. It's a great value, and the games are amazing. I flew to the Oculus Kinect conference last week, and I just played What the Golf the entire time, and it is one of the best games I've played this year, probably going to end up being in my top games of the year. It's a cool little golf game that has these mechanics that just like evolve over time and ends up becoming like a love letter to games all around, and I'm just having all these cool experiences with Apple Arcade. I really like Overland. I like, there's a card game. It's like a puzzle game where you're moving cards around with a touchscreen. I forget the name. Everything is good. Everything is good on Apple Arcade. And you can play it on your iPad, iPhone, Mac, Apple TV. You could spread your performance kind of across all the systems. I think that's pretty cool.
All right. I'm just going to shout out Google Stadia. That's it.
That's
the tweet.
It's not even comparable.
I know, but that's it. That's
Stadia is
you know
cloud
I mean?
Gaming. Don't
yeah.
don't make me go real gamer guy on you, Sherlyn. But yeah,
oh,
Stadia.
Oh, you
Stadia
did not
cool.
just do that.
Stadia
oh.
is cool. But actually, just after Apple Arcade launched, Google was like, here's Google Play subscription. $5 a month for games that are on Android.
I just as the main Google girl at Engadget, I kind of have to just point it out. I just have to do my job and be like, listen,
Stadia is cool. Stadia is cool. I'm going to be very excited to talk about Stadia because I think by the end of this year, we're going to have some really cool game streaming options. This is why the podcast is coming back, by the way. This is, we want to have these conversations. I love having these chats. I love yelling at Sherlyn. We're going to bring on all of the Engadget folks to do this and to dive into what we love and hate about tech. Let's wrap things up. Once again, shoot us a note at podcast@engadget.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes and your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review. Anything cool. Sherlyn, where can we find you on the internet these days?
Try not to send me nasty tweets at Sherlyn Low, CHERLYNNLOW.
And you can find me at Devendra on Twitter. That's DEVINDRA. I'm writing about cool stuff in Engadget. I podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com at the slashfilmcast there. Go subscribe to that if you want to yell at me for my movie tastes. And with that, we're out.